take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80. I'm Jason Fitz, and we start the hour with some headlines that you need to know. We know at this point, obviously, the pandemic has caused financial issues for sports across the landscape. Well, Marlins CEO Derek Jeter has told team employees during a conference call he's indefinitely foregoing his salary during the coronavirus pandemic. Reportedly, that salary is about $5 million annually, so he told members of baseball ops on the call they'll be paid through at least May 31st, and that he'll be foregoing any salary as they continue to figure out how to navigate these waters moving forward. A little bit of NFL news. The Patriots make their first uniform change in 20 years, but it doesn't look completely new to everybody. There's still some familiarity. That's right. They've taken their new jerseys as the Color Rush alternates that they'd worn in the past. So they took Color Rush concept. They're making that now their permanent concept moving forward. So that has our good buddy Jerry that works on Go Look and Win Go quite happy. He says they look clean, and he's the fan, so I'll take his input on it. And lastly, the San Francisco 49ers are open to trading draft picks in the NFL draft. They have two first-rounders, 13 and 31, and they've told Adam Schefter that they are open to dealing either or both selections. So it looks like the 49ers, who currently have no selections in the second, third, or fourth rounds, want to acquire more picks. So quantity, quality, that debate, the 49ers looking at it and saying, maybe there's an opportunity to move down, and that's what they're going to be open to doing. Speaking of draft news, it should be noted all eyes are on some of our NFL insiders as the NFL is trying to do their mock draft right now, using, of course, no current players, but they're going through the mock process. Adam Schefter tweeted out 36 minutes ago, text from a participant on the NFL's mock draft that started at 1 p.m. Eastern. The quote, mock draft today, already technical glitch with Cincinnati's first pick, several exclamation points. Brutal. Diana Rossini also coming in and chiming in on this on Twitter, as she has tweeted out just a little bit ago, asked a coach to describe this mock draft. Quote, you've got the NFL main room that only main people in the organization can log into. You've got 15 to 20 scouts and coaches on another meeting. You have to find a way to call prospects after you pick them, sign off for trades. Lots of moving parts. So it looks like at this point, it started off brutally, but she also pointed out after the start, it's running smoothly. It's quiet, actually, on the call. So everybody's trying to figure out what this process looks like. That's why they're doing the mock. Keep an eye on Adam Schefter and Diana Rossini's Twitter accounts to get the latest updates on what people are telling them about how it's working. In the meantime, I want to make sure you know about the All In Challenge. It's a fundraising effort for coronavirus crisis relief. 100% of what's raised benefits organizations providing food to those in need. Go to allinchallenge.com to see all the once-in-a-lifetime sports experiences and items to bid on or enter to win, including you can design and call a play at a Philadelphia Eagles preseason game, batting practice and dinner with Aaron Judge. You can play horse, sit courtside for a Lakers game with Magic Johnson. It's important to note here, 100% of the proceeds benefit organizations providing food to those in need. I want to tell you guys, go out there and look at the site, but really look at it. There's two different sides to it. There's an auction side. And what's happening is a lot of people look at the auction side. They see the price of some of these experiences, like hanging out at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers first home game with Tom Brady. You see the price and you sort of recoil back in fear because it's very high. Remember, there's another section of the website that lets you essentially just buy raffles and the opportunity to just be a random pick. So you can buy a raffle ticket that gives you the opportunity to, for example, appear in a Scorsese movie that also features De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio. So all sorts of cool experiences out there. It's as simple as buying a raffle ticket to do it. If you want to participate, learn more about how these organizations help, visit allinchallenge.com. These are tough times for a lot of people. I would implore you, if you have a few dollars that you can donate, it's a great way to help get people fed during this time. Allinchallenge.com. Go out there, check it out. So in the meantime, let's get over to some NFL news. And the NFL news is focused on the quarterback position specifically. We've talked a lot about QB continued. It's the series that they do every day on First Take Your Take, where they take a look at a quarterback in the NFL, a team in the NFL, and what that quarterback position looks like moving forward. One of the more interesting quarterbacks to look at this year is Teddy Bridgewater. Remember, no more Cam Newton in Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater comes in. He signs a 3-year deal to be the starter for the Panthers. So NFL analyst Steve Smith joined Max and Stephen A. to talk about Teddy Bridgewater and whether or not he's a franchise quarterback.
When you say franchise quarterback, I'm sorry. It's not just about being good. It's not just about being above average. It's about being the face of a franchise. That's my definition of a franchise quarterback. If we want to disagree on what our definition of a franchise quarterback is, so be it. But that's where I'm coming from. Certainly, he's a starting quarterback in the National Football League because I don't think 30 individuals are qualified to be franchise quarterbacks. Just because you're a starter doesn't mean that you're a franchise quarterback. My definition of a franchise quarterback is somebody who's not pedestrian, that's somebody who's not a game manager. It's somebody that's the face of your franchise as your quarterback for the foreseeable future. We give him the ball, and we're confident that he could get it done, not just win us regular season games, but he could potentially make some noise in the postseason, and that has yet to be proven with Teddy Bridgewater. Yes, he's completed 65% of his passes. Yes, he's 16-6 since his rookie season. Yes, he's 22-12 overall as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. The man has been in the league for about 5 or 6 years, albeit due to injury. We get all of that. He's thrown for about 7,000 yards in that span. The guy doesn't knock your socks off. I like him. I respect him. I think that he has an upside. I hope that he ultimately evolves and elevates himself to a franchise caliber quarterback. But when I think franchise, I'm thinking, here's the football. It's yours. Take us there. Steve Smith is not a quarterback. He was a wide receiver. But when he was in Carolina, okay, he was your franchise guy. They said, here's the damn football. We want him to have it. Take us there. That is what franchise is to me. I don't give a damn. It's a franchise linebacker. It's a franchise lineman. It's a franchise secondary player, cornerback, quarterback, running back. I don't give a damn. When you say franchise, that's what you're talking about. That ain't no damn Teddy Bridgewater yet.
Wow. I guess as I'm getting older and being on the media side of this business, I actually agree with Max and Steven. A little bit of both of what you guys said is really intriguing. A franchise quarterback, franchise, whatever position, the question is, can you win or without that guy? And right now the Carolina Panthers are in a place that really requires they have to analyze every single position. And they're starting with the quarterback first. Now, I don't necessarily agree with them releasing Cam Newton, but they did that. Every franchise will do that where there's both parties agree, mutual separation, or it just comes about it the way it does. However, each team evaluates, and when a new team, when a new organization has a new owner and then eventually gets a new head coach, transitions happen. And each coach and owner, they want their guys, whether people like it or not. That's just the way business goes. You feel more comfortable and you take the wins and unfortunately the lumps of losses a little bit better when you have guys that you feel more comfortable with. That's not wrong, right, or indifferent. That's just the way it is when you're talking about millions and billions of dollars and other men's egos and perspective. And I as a player, I didn't necessarily agree with it and I didn't see it that way. But now, obviously, as I've gotten older and seen a lot of how things have transpired through the back, through the channels of what way business is done in football and being a businessman or attempting to be a businessman like myself, I can respect, not always agree, respect the way things are done and understand that sometimes when money's involved, egos, things are going to get messy. Is Teddy Bridgewater a franchise quarterback? They picked him up in free agency. And I look at free agency as a quick fix. It's duct tape. That's what free agency is. The draft is about getting long-term acquisitions. You do your homework. You do your you check their social. You get their social security number. You get all of their information. That's what the draft is. Free agency is really you're just borrowing someone for that amount of time, and then you get the guy that you want through the draft, or maybe through free agency or a trade for a young player. That's how I view free agency and Teddy Bridgewater. For Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers, that's their guy for right now.
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. I think the Panthers are one of the more compelling teams to look at right now, trying to figure out what they do moving forward. The shutdown, obviously, and the lack of communication makes things difficult for Matt Rhule, and obviously, as they rebuild the organization. But also, how are they rebuilding the organization? What's the approach, especially going into the draft where they have a high draft pick? What's their approach in looking at impact versus looking at trades versus looking at how they're going to build? So what we like to do here, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, Progressive's Home Quote Explorer, gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. We like to be a little progressive and take the QB Continued series a step further. And by getting somebody to come on that's an expert that can give us the current thoughts on all things Panthers. So ESPN Panthers reporter David Newton joins us. David, hope you guys are safe and well and everybody's great. Thank you so much for taking the time. When you look at the approach for the Panthers coming into this draft, I mean, we know the deal for Christian McCaffrey. We know Teddy Bridgewater. Are they viewing Teddy Bridgewater as the franchise quarterback that they're going to build around, or are they still looking for that?
I like the way you said it when before I came on, where you said Teddy Bridgewater is the quarterback for now. I mean, you look at it, he's got a 3-year deal. The first 2 years are fairly team-friendly, but then that third year, they're more Teddy-friendly, but the third year, you know, if the team wanted to get out of it, they could do that without, you know, really hurting them as far as the salary cap. So I haven't totally ruled out that if the right quarterback were to fall to number 7, that they would take a flyer on that and say, let's say a Tua fell that far, and, you know, Tua needs a year to still sit out and make sure he's completely healthy. I mean, Bridgewater would be a pretty good person to learn behind, and, you know, he's kind of a generational type player. At Bridgewater, you kind of know what you got. He's solid. He's not spectacular like they were used to with Cam Newton, but he is solid and a guy that they can depend on. But are they going to depend on him long term? I don't know yet, but, I just don't think they're going to build around him as much as they're going to build more around Christian McCaffrey and what he can do, because that's why they gave him the long-term deal, to kind of build around him and everything he's all about as far as a multidimensional player.
We're talking to ESPN Panthers reporter David Newton. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. That's interesting to me, David, because Christian McCaffrey, you talk about having the 7th overall pick. How could they best use that to help Christian McCaffrey?
Well, they spent most of their free agency trying to do things to help Christian McCaffrey. They got Russell Okung to come play left tackle. That's going to help him. It's going to help Teddy Bridgewater. That's a short-term fix because this is the last year of his deal, and he's getting up there in age. But they've got a couple of left tackles in the fold right now they want to develop, they think can be that long-term guy. And they got Robbie Anderson from the Jets. That's another player that they feel like can add another dimension to that offense. Well, that'll help McCaffrey where he doesn't have to do as much. I think they're going to spend most of this draft on the defense because they didn't pay a lot of attention to that in the draft. They've got some players that'll help, but most of those are 1 or 2 year deals, guys that are in there just sort of to bridge the gap, so to speak. So, I mean, if the right defensive tackle was there, and there's going to be a good defensive tackle there. I mean, a lot of mock drafts have Derek Brooks there, and excuse me, Garrett Brown there, and if they don't want him, they have a lot of interest in the kid from South Carolina, Kinlaw. So they've got a choice there, and who knows, even a guy like Isaiah Simmons from Clemson could fall, and he can play, you know, as Dabo Swinney told me when I was down at Pro Day at Clemson, he said, that's like getting 3 first-round draft picks and all the positions he can play. So he's the guy that could they'd probably be able to fit right in. And Matt Rhule likes a guy that he calls a positionless player where, you know, he's not defined by one position. And a guy like Simmons would be just that. So I think they've set themselves up where they don't have to take a specific player, a specific position right now in the draft, if there's somebody there that kind of intrigues them. But they said that we're in pretty good shape to kind of build from where they are right now. I think the plan so far is pretty good. The offense looks like it can be competitive with anybody. The defense right now, I think it's got still a lot of questions.
First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. We're talking to ESPN Panthers reporter David Newton. We've talked a lot about Matt Rhule and trying to figure out what the identity for coach is going to look like in the NFL coming away from Baylor. Defensively, what is their approach and plan for an identity?
It looks like they're going to kind of go back to more of a base 4-3. They switched over from 4-3 to 3-4 last year under Ron Rivera, but they won't be identified strictly as that. They want to play a lot of multiple fronts. And the key for what Matt Rhule wants to do and what, you know, Phil Snow, their defensive coordinator, wants to do, they want to be fast and get to the ball and very aggressive. So that's why they got Shaq Thompson, outside linebacker, that could play kind of like Isaiah Simmons. They re-signed him to a long-term deal at the end of the season, and he's a guy that can play all over the place. And they've got several other players that can do that. So they're going to build around speed and aggressiveness right now on defense and just go after it right there. So I don't know if they're going to depend as much on those big bodies in the middle, although they've got a pretty good one coming back this year in K1 Short, who missed last year with with IR with a shoulder injury.
I think, David, any Panthers fan would absolutely be furious with us if we didn't at least address and talk about the Christian McCaffrey contract and as you get into the draft and look at it. I mean, much has been made about his production, but that production hasn't always equaled wins. So given what they've given Christian McCaffrey to come in and be with the team long term, how do they translate that production into more wins?
Well, first of all, you got to have a defense because you can't stop anybody. It doesn't matter what Christian McCaffrey does. And the last couple of years, they really haven't had a solid defense. And the quarterback play has got to be solid, too. And the last 2 years, Cam Newton's first with a shoulder injury, then the foot injury. So he's really been that's been a key spot. So I think getting Bridgewater in there, that'll solidify that part, and that's going to help McCaffrey and help the offense in general because last year particularly, they were dependent on totally unproven players. So that should help them. But I really like the deal they made with him. I know on the surface, he's the highest paid running back in NFL history at $16 million a year with the extension. But if you look at it, it's going to go over 6 years, not 4 years, because you're including this year and next year, which would have been the fifth year option. So you spread it all out over 6 years. It's really only $12.5 million a year. And that's a pretty good deal for a guy that does all Christian McCaffrey can do.
Any chance in your mind that this is a team that's basically going to put this season off to the side and try and find a way to get themselves to, you know, as we all hear, the tank for Trevor now will be the big thing to try and get themselves into a Trevor Lawrence type situation next year?
It's hard to predict you can actually get to the win total to tank for Trevor. I think if they knew they could go into this season and tank it totally and get Trevor, yeah. But there are going to be other teams that are going to be bad, too, out there. So I don't think they've completely given up on this season at all. I wrote for this morning that how Matt Rhule has kind of philosophy that he got with that 1 year he was with the Giants from Jerry Reese, their former GM, where you kind of put yourself in position by the middle of the season or to the end of November to make a run at the playoffs. And then if you can do that, make a run at the Super Bowl. If you remember, that's kind of what they did. The Giants did back in 2011. They were 6-6 at one point and then got hot into the season and got to the Super Bowl and beat the Patriots. And that was what Rhule was coming into that situation when he was there. So I think if you look at what they've done offensively, they feel like they can be competitive. And they feel like if they get a couple of good pieces on defense in the draft, they can raise that level where they can be competitive. Well, I don't think they can get to the point where they can be a serious playoff contender, but we've seen in the past teams that you had low expectations of surprise. So in this league, you just never know.
You can follow him on Twitter at DNewton, ESPN, David Newton. David, as always, man, we appreciate your insight. Thank you so much for the time, and I hope you guys are staying safe.
Same to you.
All right, David makes a great point there because, look, in my mind, the Panthers are too good to be too bad. I mean, Christian McCaffrey is going to make them good enough to win a lot of football games. So tanking isn't really in the cards for them. The most interesting thing about the draft to me is their placement. You're going to find out a lot about what they think at quarterback when they're picking where they are. Because if you're looking at a seventh pick in the first round of the draft, you're looking at the opportunity to get a tremendous impact player. But you're also looking at just enough there that they could try and move up. If they want to try and move up for quarterback, they could try and move down if they're more interested in accumulating. So you'll get a real sense of what they actually think of Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, the Teddy Bridgewater contract could either be viewed as taking a chance on a future franchise quarterback, or it could be viewed as bridging the gap until you actually find your guy. The money to Christian McCaffrey, to me, is as much about the production, as much about the ability to give you results on the field, as it is about giving you a reason to be relevant. I mean, Christian McCaffrey's going to keep butts in the seats. He's going to make this team relevant, and that does matter at some level. So if you're the Panthers, who, by the way, picking at 7, will have the opportunity, especially on the defensive side of the football, to get somebody that's presumed to be a game changer out of this, you have the opportunity, as David mentioned, to build your team up. You have the opportunity to make your defense better. You have the opportunity to make your team much more competitive. The enticing thing is, what if? We keep hearing all of this speculation about what if Tua Tagovailoa does fall? What if the Dolphins decide that they're more comfortable taking Justin Herbert, and all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where what if you could have that quarterback sit at seven, and you're now having to make a real choice. A choice between a quarterback that may or may not be great, but is probably good enough to help you win football games, or a quarterback that has a share of health issues, but if healthy, has the opportunity to be a once-in-a-generation player. We've seen how good the Panthers can be when the quarterback and the running back are both playing at high level. The question is, how good can they be with Teddy Bridgewater, and do they believe that the ceiling with Teddy Bridgewater would eclipse the ceiling they could get should they have the opportunity to make a move on Tua Tagovailoa? Do they make a move for the now or a move for the future? That's going to be the most compelling part about the Panthers going into the draft. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. Speaking of draft, coming up next, we're going to talk to a front office insider that knows more than anybody about what the draft process is like and has his eye on who should be taken. We'll do that next. But first, First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, simulcast on ESPN News, of course. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Want to get your take on it. We've been asking you guys what your take was on The Last Dance. Did you love it? What did you love most about it? What was your favorite moment? Did you hate it? Tell me everything. Any take you've got on first on The Last Dance, we'll take. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. In the meantime, though, we're only a few days away from the NFL draft. As I told you before, in case you weren't listening then, I do believe Mina Kimes, Mike Golick, Field Yates, myself, we'll all be hanging out again doing an NFL draft. Some NFL draft work of some sort, still figuring out exactly what it looks like, but I'll make sure that you know how you can get some of that content. So as we get ready for the draft, it's coming in just a couple of days. We wanted to get some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, and we do it in the form of ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. Now, Mike, first and foremost, I hope you guys are safe and everybody's well. I really appreciate your time. I miss getting to see you and you know, try and hug you in the halls of ESPN, my friend. So I hope all is well. We'll figure out elbow bumps or something when we come back from this together. But we'll get to the draft in a second. I want to start though with some, I don't know if this is breaking, but yet another development in the case of Yannick Ngakoue, the pass rusher for the Jags, who's been so good, who has now gone back to Twitter today, to just reiterate his stance as he went to Twitter and said he's tired of the back and forth. Let's get this thing done. He's made it clear he doesn't want to play for the Jags. If you were running the Jags organization, how would you handle Yannick Ngakoue's situation right now?
Yeah, Jason, great to be with you and you and your family are safe and healthy, and look forward to bowing, elbow bumping, whatever is the new normal, hopefully sooner than later. I would do everything I could within reason to develop equity in the relationship so it wouldn't get to that point. Understand that it's impossible to pay every player exactly what they want to get paid. That's always one of the big challenges you have as it relates to, you know, running a team. And then if you hit that bump in the road, and I've been close to that before in my career, the next best thing to do, Jason, is to say, hey, look, we'll work together in partnership so we can maximize everyone's respective value, be it us in a trade or with you, certainly from an economic standpoint. And by us discussing this publicly, that doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help you, doesn't help us, doesn't help us with leverage with other teams. It doesn't help you try and negotiate a contract with another team. So let's try to, you know, tamp things down. Let's bring, you know, the sort of like the public discourse down. Let's minimize the distractions, and then let's see what we can do together behind the scenes.
With the NFL draft being right around the corner, what does that do to the trade conversation, should there be one, for the Jags and Yannick?
Well, I think what you're looking at is where I think this helps Jacksonville a little bit. Unlike some other positions, I don't think this is a great pass rush draft. So if you need a young pass rusher and he is young, he is productive, I think this is one where there could be a market for him, unlike, you know, let's say a receiver, because this draft is so deep at receiver. So I think there are a couple of good pass rushers, but not a lot.
So what would you assess as his value if somebody's trying to trade for him?
I'd say, you know, maybe top of the second would probably be a place where I would look, you know, maybe bottom of the first, so 25 to 45, I think somewhere in there, because he is productive, he is young, and pass rushers, as we know, Jason, are really hard to find.
We're talking to ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. So let's dive into this draft a little bit. A lot of speculation right now about Tua Tagovailoa and whether he may fall in the draft because of his health. Where are you right now on Tua?
Well, you know, look, you're really good at what you do. You've been skilled at a lot of different things in your career, and I'm sure one of the reasons you're great is you have a process that you believe in and work hard at. You didn't just show up today and walk on your show and start it. You probably read things off the internet. You work with a producer. You had rigor in your process. And every GM, every team in the NFL does the same thing. They have rigor in their process, meaning they spend millions of dollars on their medical staff. And when you have a complicated injury like this, you would want to examine the player, see his strength, want to see his range of motion, likelihood of him getting hurt again. This is a very complicated injury, and let's all hope that he has the career that he wants and deserves because he is so talented. But we're asking some GM to just literally walk on the set and bypass all their process. And that's not really fair how we're judging a team or a GM. And I think we in the media collectively have probably minimized that aspect of it. Someone's going to take an enormous gamble 72 short hours from now, Jason, without all the information.
ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum joining us. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, just days away from the NFL draft. I'm Jason Fitz. So talk a little bit about that quarterback position then overall. What does that do? If you are a quarterback needy team and you're not comfortable with Tua, what do you do in that case if you're looking at Justin Herbert, who you may not have as high on your draft board, but you're trying to figure out what to do because you just want a quarterback?
Yeah, and I guess for me, like, Justin Herbert is high on my board. I look at a guy that looks like Ben Roethlisberger, really good athlete, played really well against Utah and Wisconsin. If the Oregon defense didn't break down against Auburn late in that game, you're looking at a one-loss Oregon team probably playing the Final Four. He was the MVP of the Senior Bowl. He threw the ball really, really well at the Combine. So I think he checks a lot of the boxes. And I think, generally speaking, not just, I would say, at the quarterback position, I think we're going to see a little bit more risk adverse this year because of the way the offseason went. So I don't think we're going to see as many sort of trades or risks over the 3 days of the draft.
We're talking to ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. And let me get your thoughts then on another difficult position because there's so many takes on the wide receiver. Seems to be three wide receivers that most people are in love and at the top of that board. How do you separate them?
I would start with Ruggs because Ruggs has speed and toughness, and you go back to the Super Bowl, and he was clearly, you look at Tyreek Hill, he was clearly the best player on the field, and he was probably, I should say, after Mahomes, just in terms of the difference between winning and losing was the one or two plays that Hill made, and I see Ruggs being very similar. I think Judy's going to be really, really good. My only concern on CeeDee Lamb is when you see him up close and personal, like, he is phenomenal. He is plays tough, makes contested catches, but he's really slight of build. And my concern would be, Jason, is does he have the body build to withstand the rigors of a 16-game NFL season?
That's an interesting point, Mike, because, again, with the limitations that coronavirus COVID-19 has put on the ability to see some of these guys the same way, how does it affect your assessment of somebody like that when you don't necessarily get the same pro day opportunity or interview opportunity in person?
Yeah, again, I think what we're going to see less risk overall is my sense of it, just from a standpoint of you're not going to be able to go through, again, the rigor in your process, bring them in or get them on the board, whatever your process may be. So I think when we look back in 3 years, we're going to see good players from big schools get overdrafted, and we're going to see good players from small schools get underdrafted.
And that's interesting, Mike, because they're doing the mock process today, but we frequently see trades in the draft, especially mid-late rounds. But when you start to get into that 5-minute time period to make a pick, how does the communication change affect your ability to actually even process trades?
Yeah, I think for what it looks like to me is trades will be the most difficult thing to do. And I think what we're going to see, Jason, is prepackaged trades. What I mean by that is, it's going to be, we're going to agree ahead of time that, hey, if one player is there, we're going to come up for him. We'll trade this amount and no more or less. And likewise, on the other side of the phone, we're not going to expect you to change your mind in terms of the value of that pick. Because when you're on the clock and let's say you have the 10th pick in the draft, we're talking to teams at 8 and 9, but we're also talking to teams at 11 and 12. And now you want to talk to your head coach, your owner, and to make those decisions in split seconds is really, really hard to do. So I think we're going to see less trades. And to the extent we do see trades, I think it will be agreements that were made ahead of time.
We're talking to ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. A lot of times we see trades, Mike, where suddenly you're including next year's draft picks. Are teams in your mind going to be more willing to trade out of this year's draft entirely into next year's because they can have more normalcy in their process?
Well, that's an interesting point. I think it's also where you are, you know, in terms of your team. Like, let's face it, there's a little bit more pressure on some of these teams. Detroit, for example, Jacksonville. I don't think they're really worried about next year's draft. I think they just want to get to next year's draft.
Well, and that is also a fair point. And that brings me, you mentioned the Lions. You opened that can of worms there, Mike. So if you're sitting there with the Lions, who could be looking at a generational talent like, let's say, Jeffrey Okuda, that so many are high on at the third overall pick, or you're looking at the opportunity to trade down, you may not get as great a player, but you'll pick up more players for somebody that wants to move up in the quarterback market. How do you assess that from a front office standpoint, that weigh those two options?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You're always very like, what's best for your team? Yeah, and this is sometimes owners get conversations of, hey, we want to win for today and develop for tomorrow. And I've said this for a while, Jay. I really feel like the draft starts at three. And what's hard about the discussion now, candidly, is, you know, we don't know the benefit of all the information on Tua. But if let's say somebody like Tua Tagovailoa was completely healthy, completely clear, and you're Detroit, what do you do? You know, Kuda's going to be a great player. Tua may be as good as Drew Brees. So that's always like the really hard part about, you know, these inflection points is, you know, are you doing what's best for your team short term or long term?
Mike, before we let you go, is there somebody that's sort of on your radar that you think we're not giving enough attention to as a draft prospect?
Zach Bond, University of Wisconsin. I think this guy's Teddy Bruschi. I think he's high character, high motor, productive. He's a really good athlete. I think he has position flexibility. And when I was watching him get coached by Matt Patricia, ironically, of the Detroit Lions in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, he spent a lot of time with him. And I can't think, you know, Matt Patricia, who comes from that New England Patriot tree, isn't seeing a young Teddy Bruschi and Zach Bond. So I don't know where he'll be drafted, but I think 3 years from now, we'll look back and say, like, wow, he's one of the 20 best players, football players, that is, from this year's draft.
Follow him on Twitter at Real Tannenbaum, as always, doing the great work. Mike, we appreciate you. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks so much for the time, my friend.
Okay, Jason. Thanks so much for having me.
That's some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. Love the Straight Talk from Mike. If you're not following him on Twitter, on social media in general, he does a great job of breaking this stuff down, and he's one of the guys that I would strongly recommend you give a follow to going into the NFL draft so you can get some of his insights on players coming off the board and what he sees, what he's thinking there. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I want to keep getting your take, your reaction to The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in to give us your reaction to The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. Coming up, everybody tuned in for it, but hear what an NBA superstar had to say about Jordan next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Everybody's reacting to The Last Dance, episodes 1 and 2. You can get in on the fun. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the conversation. Tell us what you think, what you thought of The Last Dance. Don't forget, you can tune into it every Sunday night. It's a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. 10-part series started last night, continues every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Afterwards, listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast presented by State Farm, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Jalen and Jacoby did a great job last night with some massive numbers on that, so be sure to check it out. If you missed the second hour of today's show, lots of great NFL talk. You can go get it on demand in the First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. Win in Missouri. What was your take on The Last Dance? What's your reaction to it?
Well, it just renewed my hatred for and disgust for Jerry Krause. I had never seen such a selfish, look-at-me individual tear up a dynasty, a potential dynasty. You have the greatest player on the planet saying, I don't want to play unless I have this coach and unless I have this. You let him do that. We're going to tear it up and rebuild. And to tell Phil Jackson, I don't care if you win 82 games, you're not coming back. Boy, if I could find him, bring him back, I'd do it just to slap him in the face. And Reinsdorf, an idiot, just for letting it happen. I'm a Bulls fan, Chicago fan, all my life. And I was so happy. I used to be there with the Lovable Bulls cheerleaders. I used to be one of the kids that would mop up the sweat from everybody who would fall over. So seeing that team blow blow up like they did, and then watch Krause and Reinsdorf tear it apart. Broke my heart. What?
Well, and Wynn, thanks for your take on it. You're totally right about Reinsdorf, too. He doesn't come out of this guilt-free. I mean, he writes the checks. He could have fixed this, and he just didn't. So it's interesting. I want you to hear a little bit of how Kevin Durant was influenced by this. Jay Williams and Kevin Durant were on ESPN Plus, the boardroom. They talked about Michael Jordan inspiring KD growing up.
You were 10 years old in 97, 98, the last run with Phil Jackson and MJ. What do you remember growing up in PG County about this?
I mean, Jordan was everything. You know, he was the standard. He was what you strive to be as a basketball player. I mean, obviously the shoes, the jersey sales, the commercials, all of that stuff was constant. But when you watch the play and your eyes were always glued to the TV, glued to him. And he just personified winning and competitiveness. And, you know, as a young player, I took from that.
He has that line, win at all costs, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
When I say that, how does that translate to Kevin Durant?
Well, anything, you know, coach needs you to do it on the floor, anything, you know, you got to be prepared for any situation. And I think MJ was always prepared, no matter if he had to hit the game-winning shot, make the game-winning, you know, assist, get a steal, get a block shot. I think he was always prepared for every moment. And, you know, that's what win at all costs means for me. Always focused, always dedicated to your teammates. Like MJ wanted to win and wanted his teammates to shine as well. So you've seen that through watching him. And as I got older and more mature, I started to realize, you know, some of the tactics that he used, you know, was definitely, you know, part of the leadership qualities that he had. It was unique to watch.
So many takeaways from The Last Dance, but especially episode 2 with Scottie Pippen. I think one of the big takeaways from that was sort of the way the organization chose to do business. Yes, he chose to sign a long-term contract that even the owner of the Bulls advised him not to for $18 million. He came from nothing. Injury concerns, as Mike Greenberg smartly pointed out, made him feel concerned that his career would be short. Yes, he took the risk. But at some point as an organization, the Bulls looked around and decided that happiness meant nothing, that the tension was good. And Scottie Pippen decided he didn't want part of that. Something we're used to seeing now. Players affect their own destiny in the NBA, where they come in and say, I won't do this. I won't play for this team. I won't do this without more money. It's become commonplace. It wasn't commonplace when Scottie Pippen did it. In fact, Michael Jordan even called it selfish in the documentary when he looked at it. But when you look across the board, the Bulls as an organization decided that they didn't care about making anybody happy when, frankly, they were making money hand over fist and could have done it. They chose not to. They chose to dismantle this dynasty. That was the most interesting part of the beginning.